Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Well, Maxine and listeners, I'm so glad you're here today. Maxine, did you just hear my outburst on air? I didn't mean that to happen. So, listeners,
it's all right. I'm
sorry that I had an outburst
here.
We have a guest we're so excited about, and for a moment we weren't sure if we were going to get him on today. So we were thinking, oh, how sad, because he's such a great guest. His name is Dr. Gregory Jantz. And we're fortunate enough, Maxine and I are, that he's located in the Northwest in Seattle, although we're both based in Portland. And he is a PhD and a popular speaker and an award-winning author of more than 26 books, including Healing the Scars of Emotional Abuse, and that's what we're going to talk to him about today, and Every Woman's Guide to Managing Your Anger. So did you know you were anger, and it's okay, ladies? He is the founder of the Center for Counseling and Health Resources. He serves clients internationally. For a free online survey, go to www.placeofhope.com, or for more information, go to his website, drgregoryjantz.com, and that's in the blurb to the show. Dr. Jantz, welcome to our show.
Good to be with you today. Thank you.
Hey, I saw
you
quoted.
Very happy you are here.
Well, we're thrilled
What's
you're
that?
Here. Oh, we love your book.
You are? You're thrilled? Well, thank you. Happy New Year.
We are thrilled.
Thank
and you.
You
know what? I read
your entire book. It's great. We don't often read them all the way through, do we, Maxine?
Yes,
maybe
I understand.
Not every book.
Not every book. The ones that are really good, we read. Hey, I saw you quoted in the Costco Connection that I got yesterday,
oh,
the
you did?
Magazine.
Yeah.
I did. Did you see that?
I did see that.
Pretty
so
exciting.
So you are a reader.
I don't know. I saw your name and I go, oh, Dr. Jantz, this is exciting.
Yes.
It was a one-word quote. It was a yes, right? Do you remember what?
I think there should be a little column there in the Costco. Yes.
And what you answered, the question you answered was, do you think that social media is making us more or less social? What's your answer to that before we get started?
I think it's making us maybe less social, actually. We forget
how
to have relationships, yes.
Yeah, we do. So Maxine Marcellini and I are here with Dr. Jantz talking about healing the scars of emotional abuse. Maxine, would you like to start the questions?
Well, I would love to start it because I have talked with too many people who struggle with one form or another of emotional abuse, and I'd love to have Dr. Jantz tell us the definition of emotional abuse.
Well, emotional abuse is, and the word abuse, I understand, it's kind of a scary word, and emotional abuse is to be treated unfairly and unjustly, usually by the same person or a group of people. It's a pattern. It's not a one-time event. You know, sometimes we make mistakes, and we may say something that's hurtful, and, you know, the healthy response is to say, I'm sorry, and seek forgiveness. Well, emotional abuse or emotional abuser have no intent in doing that. Their intent is to create harm, is to hurt us.
That's just kind of hard to believe that, isn't it? And is that, I mean, I do believe it, but do you think that's one of the reason, and if there are others, why do people who have so often been abused minimize their abuse so often? They don't want to admit that they're abused or believe it.
You know, they don't. And sometimes, you know, there's two forms of emotional abusers, really. There's those that, you know, they grew up being emotionally abusive. That's the way their home was. They just kind of learned to be that way. And they don't realize how really, in a way, how deadly it is and how harmful it is. And then there's the emotional abuser. They're cunning. They're baffling. They are manipulative. They are intending to cause harm. They are intending to cause evil on another person with motivation to create harm.
Do you think they recognize that that's their motivation?
No, I don't think they recognize their motivation. You know, ultimately, we're talking about power and control.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, they have an insatiable desire to control another human being and be powerful, and that's where they get their sense of self, because they don't really have a well-developed sense of self. If you're an emotional abuser, you don't really feel good about yourself.
Mm.
So how does a person who has grown up, I agree with you, I feel they've probably had some childhood upbringing that made them not feel good about themselves, and they grow up and they perpetuate that problem in their own families. So how would a person with that terrible sense of insecurity start to change that?
Well, I think, how do we change that? Or change the abuser or the abused?
Well, change the one who was abused, who is now the abuser, into a different life pattern of how he manages his relationships, or she manages her relationships, because this is not gender sensitive, I don't imagine.
Well, here's one of the things that happens. The emotional abuser usually does not change. There's no motivation to change. If you've ever been in a relationship with an emotional abuser, they always have the last word because, quote, they're always right. Okay? You know, there's even the emotional abuser who misuses scripture and falls over into spiritual abuse as well. That's another form. But here's the thing. They usually don't change unless there's a threat of really losing something. So losing the person they're controlling, or something has to be really jeopardized for them to really even understand that it's not a choice for them not to change.
So something has to bring that about then.
Yes, and this is why so often, you know, I don't say, well, you know, if you're married to an emotional abuser, I'm not suggesting you run off and get a divorce. I'm not suggesting that, but I think there's a time where until there is times of maybe a physical separation, until there's a way to truly get the attention of the emotional abuser, they're likely not to change.
You know, you said that abusers usually operate out of a terrible sense of insecurity. Can you explain that to our listeners? Because you're saying someone who's powerful and wants to control, can you explain the insecurity?
Yes. Usually their sense of worth comes through their really their ability to control another human being. So if I'm powerful, and by the way, we don't always have to do it with words. There's situations where a person has been so manipulated that they're controlled even through just a look or the threat of what could happen.
Mm. I've seen that.
You know, a lot of women who are the target of abuse in the home, the domestic violence things, why do so many of them stick around and continue to put up with it?
The fear, it's really a fear of not knowing what to do. It's the fear of potential repercussions. So really underneath it all is fear.
Mm-hmm. You know, does emotional abuse steal the victim's identity?
Emotional abuse really, it interferes with your ability to really develop a good, clear sense of self. And you lose track of who you are. You lose track of, do I have any value? I don't know who I am. I don't know my gifts or my talents because I don't believe I have any.
Yeah.
You just heard too much negative all along to kind of, and it's kind of robbed you then of knowing that you have a valuable identity.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what? You know what I heard Rush Limbaugh say once, and I think that has kind of something to do with what you're saying here. He said, and I'm not a Rush Limbaugh listener, I don't know even how I remember this, but he said, if you say anything 13 times, it becomes truth. Is that kind of the way it is with people who are abused? They just hear something said so often that it registers in their brain and it just feels true?
Yeah, exactly. And we start to believe a lie.
Yeah.
It's the person who, you know, they were been told they're stupid and never amount to anything. And they were told that, you know, a lot growing up. And today, as a as an adult, they believe that to be true, that they have no value.
Do people who have been treated that way as children generally marry someone who treats them that way, too?
We may do that because we mm-hmm. believe that we don't deserve, that's what we deserve, or we don't deserve anything, you know, better. That's what we have coming. You know, there's that belief.
Mm.
So how is how does a person begin to break that cycle? I mean, you're the doctor here. How
yes.
would you lead someone to break the cycle, Dr. Dan?
Well, I think we can't do it alone usually, because one of the things is we need somebody else in our life, well, to hold us accountable, but also to speak truth into our life. Maybe we've been believing a lie for a long time, and we've been, you know, victimized by somebody else's abusive words and power and control, and we are going to need some help to walk out the truth. And I know that emotional abuse is difficult because, you know, you look at a person and there's no visible scars, you don't see any bruises, but the bruises are on the inside, and sometimes it's that fear that just keeps us from really getting the help that we need.
Well, does learning not to blame yourself for what's happening help do that? Is that part of the healing process?
Absolutely, yes. As we move, one of the things is we've got to be able to separate out what's us and what's the emotional abuser. And that's sometimes difficult. What I mean by that is, we believe their truth, and we don't realize really who we are. So separating out, and the other piece that you mentioned so nicely was blame, the sense of I'm blaming myself because I deserve this, mm-hmm. and also we blame and then we minimize. We'll say, oh, that's no big deal, you know, that's just the way he is, and we make excuses. So we blame or rationalize.
We blow it off then is what you're saying, and then it turns around and the cycle repeats and it continues, correct?
It sure does, over and over and over, yes.
You know, we hear a whole lot more about emotional abuse today than we used to. Is that because we're more aware of it or because it's actually taking place more often?
I think there's probably a greater awareness of emotional abuse than ever before. But I think, too, the awareness, I think we probably also have more emotional abusers than ever before.
Hmm. Do you have any idea why?
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? While we're here just for a second, can you define it very
yeah.
clearly for our listeners? It's pretty apparent, I think, but let's just hear it from the doctor. What is emotional abuse?
Well, the emotional abuse can come in several different forms. Obviously, there's a word by our words, and consistently abusing a person through words that can be the words that undermine who you are. Could be, you know, you're stupid, you'll never amount to anything. You know, name calling in any form would be emotional abuse, that consistent
yeah.
pattern of that. There is the comparisons. You know, if you're just more like your sister, you know, you'd be okay.
Yeah.
So, comparisons, that's a form of emotional abuse. So the other forms of emotional abuse could even be through misusing of scriptures to get your way. You could use the Bible to manipulate in order to get your way, for example. That certainly would be a form of abuse.
And how about the financial thing?
So, you know, it can kind of go, it just takes on many different forms, doesn't it?
Yeah, because a lot of people, I know they have no clue what their finances are, and there's under such a watchful eye from a partner that they aren't even given money to spend. They have to come begging for everything they get.
Well, that's a good point. So the control through money, obviously, is a form. Then there's the emotional abusers that they don't really do it with words. There's the threat of potential violence. There's the threat if you don't go along with what, you know, what I'm saying or doing, there's a threat of harm. And it's mm-hmm. not even necessarily verbalized.
Okay, I'm going to confess here to, you talk about silence as abuse. I think you mentioned that already. I'm
yes.
sometimes guilty of being silent when I'm hurt. And, okay, in my defense, I don't think I'm doing it to manipulate. I
yeah.
think I'm withdrawing. But how do we know when silence is abuse and when it's not? When you are the abuser, when you're silent?
Well, silence also can be a time of I've been hurt and I
mm-hmm.
retreat and I might need a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But if I remain silent and don't do anything as far as to try to restore, repair, or to deal with whatever has happened, that could be a form of, in a way, kind of passive.
Mm-hmm.
And so not resolving issues or having a pattern of that needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
Would you explain the passive-aggressive behaviors? Because I've come across that quite
yeah.
a lot, and it's so easy for people
sure.
to fall into a pattern of passive-aggressive and just find it their normal, everyday pattern.
Passive-aggressive, yes, you're right. Thank you for bringing this up. Passive-aggressive behaviors come in different forms, but the way to think about it is things are not being dealt with directly. They're being dealt with behind your back in order to create harm. So I may smile at you as I'm talking to you, but then I'm going to turn around and say something bad about you to somebody else. That would be passive-aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think of a situation I worked with where a lady was in a women's prayer group, and she had come into the group and she had asked for prayer for her husband who had been diagnosed with some form of cancer. A woman
mm-hmm.
in the group who was very passive-aggressive, who had real intent to cause harm, instead of praying about this, she went about and started a rumor, you know, pray because her husband's having an affair.
Oh. Mm.
Okay, so that was a deliberate to cause harm and injury to another person through the passive-aggressive.
It's kind of hard to think people would actually do things like that, but they do, don't they? It's like...
You know, and that there's a line where it crosses where at
mm-hmm.
some point it just really becomes like evil. There's an evil,
yeah.
there's an evil intent to cause harm.
Yeah. Go ahead, Max.
Go ahead, Jeannie. No, go ahead.
You say that emotional abuse is damaging because it outlives its own lifespan. What do you mean by that?
Well, I can say, this is the power of words. I can say something to you today, and that state can stay with you for years. It
yeah,
outlives,
lifetime
you know, it's not a single
yeah.
event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the power of life and death in our words. And it's kind of like, I remember a gal, she said to me, she said, you know, my father said I was a chubby little toddler and that I was always going to have trouble with my weight. Okay, she's 32 years old, and she's struggled with her weight because of that message.
Yeah.
The power of the words.
Hmm.
She just internalized it so deeply. So what about
exactly.
people that are emotional abusers? Should the victim worry that emotional abuse will become physical abuse?
You know, there is emotional abusers that step over the line, and it is clearly physical abuse, and the word for that, of course, is domestic violence. But here's the thing. There's enough emotional abusers that don't cross the line. They're just always on the edge of the threat of what could happen to you. And there are some emotional abusers that know if I do something physically, that, you know, that's going to blow my cover, so to speak.
So it just depends on the individual then.
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
Okay. I was kind of wondering why some people who have been abused as a child come out dealing with it, and sometimes people don't. Sometimes it just really devastates them.
You know, I think we got to look at how am I dealing with it. So often we choose unhealthy ways to deal with abuse. Maybe I'm over consumer. I try to bring comfort in my life by overeating or over drinking, or so I've developed some faulty coping mechanisms. Maybe food is my source of comfort instead of people, for example. So look and see, you know, what have I done in really ultimately a self-destructive way that creates as a way of self-medicating. You know, spending could be one. There are just so many different ways. Zoning out on a computer for hours on end, avoiding dealing with pain. You know, what am I doing that keeps me away from...
There's a lot of people doing that one today. That's for sure.
Yes, there are. Yes.
So if we had a family member that we felt was being emotionally abused, how would we help that person?
Well, if we feel like they're being emotionally abused, we need to, again, there's going to be some patience here because it's going to be hard for them to put into words what's going on. And sometimes we've got to really point it out to them. You know, it may not even come to them until they read a book like Healing the Scars of Emotional Abuse. Oh, this is what's been going on, because they've been in the, you know, the depths of the forest. They don't really see the trees and what's really going on. And so we want to keep speaking truth into their life. And sometimes it's, you know, a matter of taking like the emotional abuse questionnaire. They've got to be able to look at the pain of what's going on in their life. And so many will need, they're going to need help on what to do with that. Some of the pain runs quite deep.
Could we go through a few of the things that you suggest in the very A Time to Heal section in your book? What would you say go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I don't have a book in front of me, so just tell
me
what's
in it. Oh, I do? Okay. I will just, I'm opening it right now to page 280. Okay.
Oh, no. Don't mention a page. I'll be lost. Okay.
No. Don't do that. That's fine. Basically, it seems to me that, as I think is true with probably all of the difficulties we face in life, God seems to be the answer. Is that correct?
Well, I think taking our value to who Christ, who God made us to be, acquiring a new sense of even purpose. Because if I've been emotionally abused, I don't really see a purpose for my life. I don't feel loved. I probably feel that God doesn't love me. I feel unlovable. I probably feel like that I'm unlovable even to others. And so to think about receiving God's love just almost seems like it could never be true. It can never happen.
Do you think God actually can heal us of something like this when we're hypersensitive and we're a quivering mass in front of somebody who's emotionally abused? Can God actually help us at a time like that?
Well, here's what happens. The more that I get anchored in my spiritual foundation with God, the more that I work on developing that, the stronger that I will become, the more insightful that I'll be coming to the abuse that's been happening around me. So I do, and people will say to me, you know what, I could have never done this and really healed long term without God's help, because there's also issues of even forgiveness. Forgiving myself, forgiving the abuser, those things that I couldn't do on my own. It requires divine intervention.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That one's huge, the forgiveness piece. That takes a lot for some people to get on that page.
It seems to kind of overshadow everything in just about every discussion we have, doesn't it, Maxine?
Yeah.
It's just heavy.
Yeah, because it's such a big, big deal when people have felt betrayed, the forgiveness piece. But at the same time, it's the central issue that has to be walked through to get to the other side where the healing takes place.
That's right.
Well, we're starting to get a little low on time. Maxine, did you have one more thing you'd like to ask Dr. Jantz?
Well, I just really appreciate the work that you're doing, Dr. Jantz, because I see this as one of the biggest issues in society today, is that we are either being bombarded with emotional abuse from someone, or we're the ones doling it out. And it can come in this list of what it means, even in us being critical of things. That's part of emotional abuse if we don't get a hold of it. And one of the more offensive ones is people who like to tell jokes that really aren't funny. They're really quite pointed at an individual.
Yeah.
So I guess I would just like to hear another comment or two from Dr. Jantz on how we could change those habits and become kinder to one another and more respectful of the person that's in front of us. And of ourselves, because we're not making a pretty picture about who we are when we do these things.
Yeah. No, that's well said. Well, one of the things that, and I have a 10-year-old boy and I have a 13-year-old boy, and one of the things that we're doing is when they're sometimes are saying things that really probably are hurtful, we'll frame it in a question to them and say, now, is that helpful? Is what you're saying helpful? And helping them reframe, because what we want to do, we want to learn about giving gratitude and grace to others. And sometimes we need to be asked the question, wow, was what I just said to that person, was that really helpful? And, you know, the answer may be no, it wasn't. And so what do I need to do?
You know, I was listening to a CD by Graham Cook, and he's talking about rest and kindness, and he said, which I thought was amazing, God is the kindest person, or not person, the kindest being he knows. God is always kind, and if we want to be like God, we need to strive to be kind. That's so simple and yet so profound, I think.
Oh, wow. There you
go. Did you have one last thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Dr. Jantz?
One of the things is, no matter the situation or how long it's been, I can tell you because of the work we've done here for 28 years that there really, truly is hope. You can get out of this. You can have a new sense of who you are. And if you're a person that's been an abuser, you know what? There's hope there as well. And we see nobody's ever regretted changing. They'll regret if they don't.
Thank you.
Change is good.
Good change is good.
Yeah.
Thank you so
it.
Much for being with us. And listeners, thank you for listening to Dr. Jantz today. I hope we'll see you next Monday with our next show.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books, plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.